welcome to another edition of the Pedestrian Podcast, still the official UK Seahawkers podcast. It is NFL mock draft climax week, or in other words, NFL draft week. This year, with most things at the minute, is going to be slightly different. To help preview that and talk through what the Seahawks made it next weekend is the 99 yards very own Mr. Duncan Terry. How are we, sir?
Yeah, doing well. Looking forward to the draft. It's been a long time coming, hasn't it? A bit quiet, but looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's like with everything, it's going to be a strange watch, but it might, again, as like free agency seemed to be for that first 6-7 day rush, it's going to be a welcome distraction for a few days, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm wondering what sort of the format will be, you know, just sort of four analysts in their own houses and... You try and watch things like you watch Sunday Brunch this morning. I don't know if you watched that, but it's just them sitting in their homes. I don't know if I'll last the distance this year, but a bit different.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're doing like a simulcast on all the networks, aren't they, as well, because I've seen Daniel Jeremiah talk about working with the ESPN guys, Kuiper and all that. So it's gonna be weird. So how are you in the current role, everything going on? How is Mr. Duncan Terry?
Yeah, grand. My other half is she's a medical professional, so I'm trying to keep her fit and healthy and positive, and yeah, just try and stay healthy myself. It's good. It's going well.
Yeah. So before we'll touch on how the Seahawks stand when, because Adam is joining us a bit later, but like we'll get into more detail about what the Seahawks have done. But have your thoughts on the draft and what the Seahawks may do altered any from what they've done over the last 6-7 weeks?
Well, firstly, I've stopped trying to second guess what Pete and John will ever do. It's it's never served me that well. Apart from the obvious trade down. It's a difficult one. I mean, with and without Clowney, isn't it? I would like them to go pass rush, but if we re-sign him, probably tackle is probably more important to me. We've got Snell, of course, but is he going to be the one, or is he just the next one? And that position group really dries up right after about the end of the first round, beginning of the second. You know, once you get to second, you're talking about Ezra Cleveland, aren't you? And it's, you know, starters are really not there once you get to our pick. You might have...
That's the thing every year, isn't it, with the Seahawks? That's what they seem to try and point out. Everyone talks, so they don't get any impact from the first round pick, but they're always picking at this stage of the first round when really most years there's 14, 15, 16, 17 really elite, gotta have talents, and then it's just everyone else. It kind of feels... exactly the same again this year. Ben Albright, who covers the Broncos over, he's been tweeting that all the hype about the wide receiver class, which is justified, it's the actual hype about game-changing receivers is in that first 20 pick slot, really, isn't it? And he thinks it's gonna be a lot of action. That's the same thing the Seahawks have to face every year, though, isn't it?
Absolutely. You talk receivers, there's so many, and also without as many numbers, running back actually goes quite deep this year as well, and could both be potentially positions of need for us.
So if first off, obviously, as I put in my mock draft I posted a couple of weeks ago over on Medium, that I think it's the last 7 years the Seahawks have never used their native first round pick. They've always traded back, or in two examples, traded for Percy Harvin and Jimmy Graham. And that was the first round cost those years. So what do you see the Seahawks using their 27th pick, or is it going to be a 4:30 in the morning UK time trade back as is always?
Yeah, those years we stay up waiting for our pick and then they don't actually make one. I mean, if it were me, and it's not, and I know very little compared to what they do, I would stop and take that tackle. But for them, you know, they're going to trade back, aren't they? It's pretty clear. And they're probably going to take a position that we probably think we're actually set in or something. But throw us completely off.
So how far do you go? Would you go back? Because, I mean... it's unlikely that Jordan Love, possibly Jalen Hurts, seems to be getting some first round buzz, which is, I'm not too sure on that. But I mean, it's probably going to be quarterback. You wouldn't see them trading the pick away and letting another team take a pass rusher, or do you think that's exactly what they're going to do? Because you're kind of looking at the Colts kind of range in the early first 5-6 picks in the second round, aren't you?
Yeah, probably. I mean, was it last year? We didn't actually get that much for trading back, did we? We went with Green Bay, didn't we, for like, what was it, one pick and, you know, later on. So it was almost seemed like they just really wanted to trade back and really didn't mind what they got because, you know, something is better than nothing. So they'll probably do it. I mean, yeah, and the Colts. I mean, Carolina, do they need a quarterback as well?
Yeah. Possibly. I mean, like... It is going to be Love or Hurts. They're the ones who, I mean, the league seems really all over the shop with a lot of prospects this year with how the scouting process post combine has gone, obviously with all the lockdowns and everything. But they kind of seem the likeliest two, don't they? I mean, Tua's may have a drop, but he's not going to have a drop that far, surely.
Oh God, no, I doubt it. You've got the Dolphins and the Chargers who just seem destined to take Herbert and Tua between them, so
yeah.
I mean, the other one's Jacob Eason. I really like him, but I know a lot of people don't as well. So anything can happen there.
I mean, he's like the prototype, isn't he? He's not the finished article that possibly Tua could be or Joe Burrow could be, but he is. If you ask the GM what a quarterback looks like and you want to spend the first round pick on, it's Jacob Eason's measurements, isn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly. And someone like the Colts could potentially pick him and sit behind their other fella for a year. You know, there'd be nothing wrong with that. They were happy with him last year, so they could.
The Colts. The Colts are really one of the teams who are going to be aggressive. It kind of feels like they obviously were relatively aggressive in getting Phillip Rivers from the Chargers. Obviously, still got Jacoby Brissett, who just seems. He seems to be a bit Marmite with the Colts fans, a few Colts fans we follow on socials as well. So if the Seahawks pick 27, do you think it's going to be in the trenches on the offensive side then? Yeah,
it's got to be trenches either side for me. You've got the rushers, Gross Matos, he might still be there, Chase and Epineza, but they could so easily be gone as well. So then you're looking at Jones and Jackson, the tackles. And after that's the positions in need, isn't it?
Yeah. What about the kid, Isaiah Wilson, out of Georgia? He seems very Seahawk-y. Kind of seems like he loves to get his hands dirty, kind of DJ Fluka type nasty streak to him, but kind of a physicality to him. He seems to be getting some push in the last 48, 72 hours. Would you be happy with him at 27?
Man, it's such a Seahawks pick to do that, isn't it?
Yes, I mean,
he's exactly the type of guy that half the fan base will go, who? And I'll rush to rush to their laptops and see who that was. You know, that'd be, you know, with the James Carpenter pick of a few years ago, wouldn't it?
Yeah. That's a great pull. I think Gross Matos has probably been that most heavily mocked Seahawk pick ever. Every mock, pretty much, it's him. What would he bring if you've watched him, and or who would he step in the breach of, kind of thing, from the last couple of years? Who, if people listening who haven't followed Penn State, haven't followed college football, what would he bring that's similar to the Seahawks of past?
Oh, for me, he brings a combination of the pass rush and the strength in the run game. He could play on the line, whereas, you know, we've obviously got Bruce Irwin back, Irvin. But he's, you know, for us, he played more as a linebacker, didn't he? We got Collier last year, and we're also determined to write him off already. So I've got Benson Mayowa. But what they're really missing for me is that position of strength in the run game at defensive end. They had Red Bryant, obviously, for a number of years. And then they went to Jefferson and we just lost him. So they do like to play an end who really is strong in the run game. And, you know, while he's not, you know, Gross Matos, you know, he's not sort of a defensive tackle hybrid like they were, but he sort of brings that in the run game as well, which I know they like.
Yeah, and another one who we'll talk about a bit more in a bit is the AJ Epineza. He seems to be a bit more, he seems like the ceiling would be higher on him than like Gross Matters feels a lot more polished and refined than Epineser. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. He's probably more of the pass rushing the Leo position as well, isn't he? And yeah. I mean, if we've got Irving, then possibly he's not the one. If he makes it that far, I don't think he will. Yeah. I think he'll be long gone.
No. There's going to be teams who are going to move up who we don't think they're going to move up, and they're going to try and get in front of the Seahawks. I think if they go offense, you talked about the line. Well, before we go on offense, defensively, if it's not in the trenches, it's not going to be a linebacker because the Seahawks seem to just hope that KJ and Bobby can play forever, which KJ is trying his damnedest to prove. But obviously, Shaq Griffin's the highest cornerback pick. Obviously, they picked Marquise Blair last year in the second round at safety. There's a bit of talk about Jeremy Chinn, and I think Doug Fraz talked about the similarities he showed at Southern Illinois to Bam Bam Cam Chancellor. Do you see a safety corner pick being this the year for that very, very early pick? And if so, after Chin, who else could there be for the Seahawks, and what would that mean for the rest of that secondary?
Do you know, for me, I ruled it out this early. They'll probably go for depth later on, but they've got Diggs and they've got McDougal, and they've got Blair behind them, haven't they? So
yeah,
he out of him and Collier, he's the one who showed flashes of having something, and I think he might be the next man up at safety. So.
Yeah,
I think he's got something, and between the three of them, also, you know, Hill's still there. If you're talking slot, you still got Amadi. They just got Dunbar, Flowers, and Griffin. Just re-signed Nico Thorpe, and he's more special teams. So they got a lot going on at secondary already. I don't think that'll be the pick that high.
Yeah, but also, I mean, the modern NFL is almost a cliche at this point, but. There's a lot of talk of how the extra DB, the nickel DB. Obviously, we lost Justin Coleman 12 months ago, and that position kind of suffered through Jamar Taylor for far too long, in my opinion. But if there's going to be a year where the Seahawks, like right or wrong of year gone by, the nickel position this early kind of would fit in line with that. But as you say, it's probably too rich with what they've got. Do you think this is a year of any year kind of thing?
See, I'm not sure. I can't work out what they're going to do with the three starters. I mean, Flowers has shown that he is a good corner, although he had a bad second half of the season. I mean, perhaps I could ask yourself, I mean, out of the three of them, I mean, they're all going to start, aren't they? But who starts on the outside?
I hope it's Trey and Shaq, because I mean, The reason Trey Flowers was abused, especially, I mean, he was abused by Davante Adams, which is, it's not like he was abused by a tight end out of Canada kind of thing. He was abused by, what, a top five, top six, top 10 wide receiver in the league with a pretty good quarterback in Aaron Rodgers as well. But
yeah,
I'd hope it's going to be Trey and Shaq. But like, they've given up a fifth round pick for Dunbar, which isn't a massive cost or price to pay, I guess, but also, I mean, I'm not too sure what his cap hit situation is with Dunbar, but it kind of feel like that Dunbar move, as you say, kind of rules everything out for the corner position. But I do think the safety position could be in the mixer with the Seahawks first pick. I think Chin kind of fits that. Maybe if they really do trade back heavily, someone like Kyle Duggar could be the dude who I mocked a couple of weeks ago. He could be that. I mean, everyone talked a couple of years ago, but Derwin James was there for the Seahawks before they traded back from, what was it, 18-19, and they traded back, and then the Chargers took him the pick after the Seahawks or something. So that Derwin James kind of player would be a lot of fun if this team in 2020 is going to be sans Clowney disruption level, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And the two you mentioned, Chin and Duggar, are totally Seahawksy type safeties, aren't they? So
I wouldn't
complain, not at all. We're not
So on the offense, skill position wise, the way the Seahawks are approaching this offseason, it could be tight end, but there aren't really any. If they go skill position, I mean, the fun of watching Seahawks Twitter burn to the ground would be fun if it's a Jonathan Taylor or a J.K. Dobbins, wouldn't it? But if it's not O-line, it's going to be out wide wide receiver kind of add into DK Tyler mix, isn't it?
I think so, but then they've never drafted that high on it. You know, I think was Metcalf the highest rated, highest draft pick on a receiver for
yeah,
us?
Yeah, Paul Richardson was second
Paul
round.
Paul Richardson was second round, yeah.
It was I'm not sure when that was.
Yeah, a few years ago. So yeah, they do have form, I suppose, but and there probably is a need there for a third receiver, but then it is a third receiver, you know, would they use that on wide receiver three, you know?
Yeah, so if they do go wide receiver, who any names that pop? I mean, for me, it's two names at wide receiver. It's Denzel Mims out of Baylor or Jalen Reagor at TCU. I mean, I text Adam about 18 months ago about Jalen. Goes, watch this guy. He could be quite good. He just looks very yakky for the Seahawks. Are those two guys or anyone else for you in that wide receiver range, this range of the draft?
I've gone later on for wide receiver, and I like someone like Donovan Peoples-Jones, who could be perfect as a slot receiver for us. I think totally our sort of player.
That is basically all the things Seahawks are going to do, isn't it? I mean, I don't think they're picking 27. I'll be somewhat surprised if they picked at all on Thursday night, which is going to make me staying up till 4 o'clock in the morning even more annoying. But Do you think the first Seahawks pick comes Friday?
Yeah, it's not going to be on Thursday, I don't think. But yeah, we're going to stay up anyway, aren't we? Let's be honest.
Yeah, we are. So we're not going to go round by round. At this point, we're just going to go through some of our favourites. So are there any, you've talked about depth at cornerback. Is there any, I'll go through the different positions. If the Seahawks do draft a running back, who would you like the Seahawks to be sitting there with on next Sunday morning, Duncan?
Now, running back wise, I've always liked Carson. I really, really like Carson, but he's shown to be prone to a little fumble. And Penny, obviously, is coming back from an injury. And we all seem to be dismissing Homer, Travis Homer. He showed something, I think. He's got a lot of potential. He was only drafted last year. And between the three of them, if they decided to stick, I wouldn't be too unhappy. We're still waiting to see what Penny's got as a first round pick, but he started to show something, and I was really pleased, and I was eating a bit of humble pie there. So if they do draft running back, I'd like to see that sort of around three or four. You know, you've got your AJ Dillon's around there, so that'd be quite nice.
Yeah, I mean, AJ Dillon is a very steel. He's very Carson-like. He kind of just trucks people, doesn't he? He's not, but ProSize is probably gone. You wouldn't. Homer didn't show reasons not to, but you wouldn't really want to put too much on him
in
week one kind of thing. But so you do kind of need that guy. So you aren't really looking for the three down back in the Seahawks anymore, are you? You're kind of looking for someone similar to ProSize who could come out and if he flanks out wide or flanks a bit in the slot or whatever behind Tyler Lockett, that he's going to be respected as. So outside of running back, any other names that you'd quite like all over the shop? Any other names you'd quite like to see the Seahawks end the draft with? And if you just want to dive into why and who kind of thing and the fits in the team?
You mentioned tight end as a need. I was wondering if we might be done there because Disley has shown that he's.
If the Seahawks draft a tight end, I have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, the class isn't that great, really.
Absolutely, and we've got three good tight ends. Yeah. Hollister showed he can, fill in as a starter and as a number three behind Olsen and Disley. Yeah. I think we're probably set there.
Yeah.
Signing Dorsett was interesting for me. Penny Hart, I think we've got on the roster at the moment, and he looks, he looked good going into last year's draft. So I still think we need that extra receiver, but. We've got something there. So it's probably defense for me, defense all the way. I like a corner, Reggie Robinson, and I probably overdrafted him in the NFL UK mock, but I really wanted him. I think he's got a lot of potential. There's another, and we're talking slot corner. It's Reed Harrison. I'm going to butcher his name. Reed Harrison DeCross. I think he's got a heck of a lot of potential. Could be had later on. So. Yeah, there's a lot of depth here, and that's what the Seahawks like to do, isn't it? To pick up those potential players in the rounds four, five, six. So.
Yeah, and another player you picked, you were the Las Vegas Raiders GM on the NFL UK mock, which wrapped up a couple of days ago, which was an arduous task for some of us. but another player you picked, I think in the end of the second, maybe early first, was Jabari Zuniga out of Florida, who's obviously Jonathan Greenard on the other side of the ball, on the other side of the line. He's getting some pop as well. But Rob Staten's talked about Zuniga. What I mean, Zuniga is that kind of Bruce Matos discounted kind of thing, isn't he?
Absolutely. I think he's going to get drafted much higher than he's going in mocks. I think he's a really talented player with that really high ceiling. I think he's got a heck of a lot of potential and could be a real difference maker.
Really do think. I think Rob Staten's touched on it as well. I think Zuniga might be our first pick next weekend.
Yeah, wouldn't shock me.
I think late 40s, I think if we can draft back that far, I think Zuniga could be our first pick. Linebacker, there's a couple of players that have... Nate Evans from Central Florida, they have, I think they've had on one of those FaceTime calls. He seems to be getting a lot of attention from the Seahawks, so he could be a name. But someone like Mark Christensen, who's a Seahawks GM for the NFL UK, Mark took in the fifth round, 153rd pick, Davion Taylor from Colorado. I mean, that kind of linebacker, obviously we saw BBK and Cody Barton come into the team last year. Shaquem Griffin is going to be a bit of an X factor, really, what he's going to bring next year. But Davion Taylor, see someone who's crossed your radar? And is linebacker someone a position you see the team hitting in the late day two, day three kind of range?
I haven't actually seen Davion Taylor, but yes, it could be, again, a later on pick. We did that last year with Barton and Burkiven, as you say, and a lot of people think Barton might be the next big thing, probably to replace KJ Wright. And I'd be really interested to see if that progresses, because I've got to be honest, I didn't see it. He showed a lot of heart, a lot of passion. He's, very high work rate, but this isn't Championship Manager. We need it needs to show a little bit more than that for me, so...
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Barton showed flashes of, but I think the problem with, I think it's a problem, but I don't know, it kind of sunk Thomas Rawls kind of thing. Like, everyone was pitting him against the guy who was in that position before kind of thing. So obviously Thomas Rawls followed Marshawn Lynch, which is an enviable task, really. And then we kind of stuttered through a year and a half until Carson exploded. But I think that's going to be the same thing at linebacker. Like, replacing KJ Wright, you need to stop saying the word KJ Wright, don't you, really, to give the player in that position any hope of being a semblance of success in the eyes of people who don't see him in the building kind of thing. Is that fair?
That is an absolutely superb point, and Thomas Rawls is a brilliant example, because he was all right. He's perfectly fine and really quite good, actually. And so, you look at some Super Bowl winning teams and they don't have star names at linebacker all the time, do they? May have one, the inside linebacker probably, who's, catching the defense, and we've got that. So,
I mean, the Chiefs are a perfect example of that. Obviously, yeah, everyone was talking pre-draft about the Niners, Fred Warner and Quan Alexander, and then the Chiefs. I mean, I couldn't tell you who their linebackers were.
Oh, did they have Reggie Ragland, who's top 10 at the journeyman, haven't they? And
But it's just a late July signing who's an important part of that defense because they had things going right the other way. Anyone at cornerback who pops to you? Obviously for me and everyone listening, hopefully heard last week's pod with Madre Harper at Southern Illinois. He's someone who is, as I said to Madre as well, that Alistair Corpy writes Philip Field Goals, has the sheet, the Seahawks draft board, and he has like parameters for every player, and Madre Harper hits every single one. He's one of the only players on that sheet, I think, this year, which hits every single, like, the 40-yard, the height, the length, the weight, the shuttle, the bench press, everything Madre Harper hits. So if he's there at the back end of round 5, early round 6, if the Seahawks have a pick at that stage of the draft, he's my guy. I would quite like to see how far. I don't think he's going to... I think the big school bias, if it's somewhat unfair, I think I would really be interested if the Seahawks took a flyer a couple of weeks ago pre-Dunbar was taking a look at Diggs out of Alabama. Is there anyone in day 2, day 3 at cornerback for you?
Yeah, I mean, there's some quite good depth later on. Amarik Robinson, Guidry, I mean, like I mentioned before, Reggie Robinson and Reed Harrison DeCrosse. So, we're doing quite well at corner already, but there's some good names later on, I think.
Yeah, but it's going to be an interesting mark because as you say earlier, that there's not a lot of predictable things for the Seahawks to do most years, but this year with how the schedule and the scouting post-combine's been, it's truncated and it's going to be a fun weekend. Do you think the Seahawks... So if you're the Seahawks, it's going to be defense and then just hope that the offense kind of clicks. Because obviously we've had Russell Wilson calling for superstars and he gets Philip Dorsett on a vet minimum deal, Duncan.
Yeah, I mean, the offense, while it doesn't look set, we've got good players in every position. You know, they can use some extras, but they're not set there, but they've got good players. We were pretty, average at guard, but, they've really thrown everything there, haven't they? You've got Haynes and Jones and Womack and Simmons, Fluker, Iparty. Center, everyone's talking about Britt leaving. I quite like Jerry Hunt. I know I'm in the minority there. I thought he was really solid and really quite good in the passing game.
Yeah. I've got to be honest, center, I think that's BJ Finney. I'm waiting for the Justin Britt has been released kind of tweet, I think. I'm not really sure what they're waiting for, but I kind of think that center position is going to be Finney and Hunt.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that either. I mean, if it was Hunt, I'd be absolutely fine with that. I think he showed a lot last year. Yeah, being thrown at the deep end. So yeah, good luck to him. And there is a name I'm interested in a tackle later on, which is Trey Adams, who I think you'll probably know quite well.
Yeah, yeah.
Up until his injuries, people were talking about him as a first rounder. So
yeah.
And
also a guy at centre from Washington, Nick Harris, seems to be getting a bit of pop as well, doesn't he? He could be a name to watch in that early, mid, late second, early day three kind of thing, couldn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Why not? It's if it doesn't work out, what we've got, he'd be a good name to try out there for sure, and not much cost. So
yeah. So obviously, there's a few names. It's a bit of our kind of very untrained eye view on what the Seahawks could do. So when you're watching the draft next week, there is a few names to keep an eye on, and then just find me and Duncan and pat us on the back, because we will be patting ourselves on the back with quote tweets, I'm sure, won't we, Duncan?
Well, I think I've mentioned just about everyone who could possibly get drafted now. So
right, okay, so that's the Seahawks outside of the draft. I've got a familiar voice in the show this week.
Tavares Jackson with time. Puts it up deep, way downfield, and it is caught for a touchdown! Ricardo Lockett!
Tavares, Jackson with time. He's going to keep. He's going to get a Seattle touchdown!
So, yeah, that is the draft dealt with, and as I said, the other side of this, just remember where me and Duncan are when we pick all of those players and they turn out to be contributors to another deep playoff run. And deciding to join the podcast for this time, he's finally managed to find the technological capabilities to do so, is Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
Yeah, it should be said that those technological capabilities are just batteries. But, that is quite technical even for me. But I feel like a guest, coming a guest on my own podcast. I've been introduced halfway through the podcast. Feels like a throwback to the olden days. I like it. You should introduce me with a bit more fervour in future, Stu. I think I deserve a grand entrance like that. So let's do that on a regular basis.
Okay. So as I said, me and Duncan have just spent the last 25 minutes, half an hour to discussing what the Seahawks may do next weekend. Then Adam joins the call and goes, oh, by the way, I've been doing research. So I'm giving an opportunity to delve in that research. What do you want to talk about this week, Adam?
Well, I think we'll get through all the Seahawk news. There's actually, in a dead period, there's quite a lot to talk about, really, isn't there?
Yeah. So one asterisk me and Duncan put over everything the Seahawks could do next week is it was in the shape of Mr. Clowney, Adam. It doesn't look like he's going to be signed by the time the draft kicks off next Thursday and everyone boots up Zoom and everything crashes and we're still there at 6 o'clock in the morning. It's annoying, isn't it? I mean, we spoke to Rob Staton about a month ago and it kind of felt like the end game was imminent, but we were wrong again. It's just annoying is kind of the word to sum up that one way or another, it's not been sorted, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you guys think about this, but I've been looking at it, and there's no way that it's panned out the way they wanted it to at this point. Like, it may end up with Clowney signing, and he might be delighted to sign a contract, and or they might get Everson Griffin. But I can't believe that when the season finished, they were going in, they would have said, we'll be very happy to go into draft week with basically no premier or even second level pass rusher. And that for me is a concern, because I, you know, you can bring in the Irvins, you can bring in the Benson Mayowas or whatever, but you know, they're coming off, I think, career high seasons, which is not that replicable, you would suggest, because they're pretty experienced guys, and you know, sack numbers typically drop when you enter Seattle and you go into the scheme. You know, most of the pass rushers we've signed, their sack numbers have been higher elsewhere, and I'm slightly concerned that they've made a bit of a pig's ear of this, although obviously I hope to be proven wrong.
I mean, like you said, it is called career highs, it's not called what he's done in his career kind of thing, is it? Duncan?
I mean, I've already written him off. I mean, I came on here and I was negative the last time I was on, but I don't want to. I'm determined not to. But they're going to be so. They really, really want Collier to succeed, I'm sure. And they brought in Irvin, yeah. They brought in Mayowa, and I just think that they're not. I think, but for the fact that no one can do a medical at the moment, he'd already be gone.
Yeah. Do you think any other team would be excited to have signed Bruce Irvin?
Maybe the Panthers. Because he was quite good for them last year. Let's be honest. I think probably them, but then that's because they have Brian Burns and that's about it on that defense, I think. But yeah, no, I get your point. I think Bruce Irvin's quite a good signing for the Seahawks if, like you said, like a Clowney or the Minnesota guy, Everson Griffin was signed. But the fact, as you say, he isn't, and we're walking into this rather thin at defensive end pass rush position, it's kind of, yeah, it's slightly concerning. But as I said, in my mock, that kind of sees why I think they could find different ways to create pressure in 2020, if there is a season, Derwin James adjacent defensive back, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, my overriding thought is that whatever your prior thoughts are of John Schneider and Pete Carroll, you could use the offseason thus far to justify and validate those thoughts. Like, if you weren't particularly pro either of them and the way in which they build a roster, you could say they've spent a load of money and they've packed it with, you know, second, third, fourth tier players, instead of getting the stars that Russell Wilson wanted. And if you're pro Pete Carroll and John Schneider and the way in which they build a team, you could say they've spent money really wisely, they've added loads of depth, and now if they have a good draft, we can go into the season and maybe be one of, you know, the best team again. I kind of find myself sat in the middle of those two camps. I think they probably spent too much money on not enough star power, and especially when the quarterback himself comes out and says something like, we need some stars, and you don't sign any, that is a concern to me. But I do think they've done some decent work, you know, on the offensive line. I think Dorsett is a fairly wise, you know, fourth guy to bring in on minimal money. So, as I say, I think whatever your views are of the front office, you can use this offseason basically to, like, confirm your priors.
Well, I tweeted out something a couple of weeks ago about who the GM of the decade was, and I listed all the reasons it should be John Schneider, and someone on this podcast replied, no, that was Scott McLaughlin, Duncan. So I think Adam, you are talking to someone who may be slightly negative on Mr. Schneider's work. So would you agree with Adam there, Duncan?
I mean, I would, and you would have missed it, Adam. We were talking about the offense, and you know, would we need to draft anyone? And I described all the players as now all right.
Yeah.
But then none of them are special. Obviously, you know, Wilson, you know, obviously. But you could easily replace any of them. Probably not Dwayne Brown or Tyler Lockett, but I mean, DK Metcalf, you know, I could list a few, but I'm blithering like an idiot. They're all right. But you could easily draft a lot of players who are, or bring in for free agents or whatever, who are better than what we've got. But yeah, they're fine. They're brought in depth, as you say, but not those stars that's really going to change the team.
No, which kind of mean if that's still the case in the week, obviously we don't know what the stars are going to look at this draft class, no matter how many mock drafts people do. But it kind of feels that they've almost put too much pressure on this draft, haven't they, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, just to continue on the point, I think if you look at like the tight end room, that is one that that confirms this point and what we're talking about better than anyone. Like the optimist would say, you got Will Disley who could be Pro Bowl talent, you got Greg Olsen who could be a great safety blanket for Russell Wilson, and then you got Luke Wilson and Jacob Hollister who are great, you know, role players and they can do their job and they'll catch a ball if you need them. And then the pessimist in you could say, well, Will Disley's a permacroc, Greg Olsen is 36 years old and earning $7 million a year, and Luke Wilson hasn't done much for 3 years, and Jacob Hollister probably tailed off after week 10. So, I mean, does that make sense that you could kind of see it both ways, depending on what your views are of pretty much on what your priors are of what you think of these guys? And I do think there is a lot of pressure on the draft to find some star quality. And, you know, they're probably going to trade back. And I just think that they're going to kind of go quantity over quality in the draft, which isn't as necessary. It sounds like a criticism. It's not necessarily a criticism, but it will be if they come out of this with kind of a bunch of 7.5 out of 10s, and then they're asking Russell Wilson to perform magic again, which really is the main reason we've been uber competitive in the last few years.
Yep, I agree. But also, you can say the same on the offense, because obviously DK Metcalf kind of took, obviously he's a rookie, but he kind of took, what, 10 weeks to do anything really consistently. Mm-hmm. Tyler Lockett went missing for 5 or 6 weeks, and then we started to break out when DK Metcalf broke out. David Moore disappeared off the face of the earth. Running back, obviously, Carson had these fumbling issues, but was relatively solid. Rashad Penny had, what, 4 decent, like, NFL-worthy runs kind of thing. So, yeah, so it is, like, everywhere is just kind of, there is room for improvement, but it's if they've put themselves in position to improve. Other Seahawks news, Adam?
Or did you go over the very sad news about Tavares Jackson?
No, we didn't. I'll do that again. I'll say it properly. So, yeah, also with Seahawks, it wasn't all positivity and everything. Obviously, 10 days ago, about a week ago or so ago in Alabama, Tavares Jackson, who was a starting quarterback in 2010, 2011 for the Seahawks, and then was the backup for Russell Wilson, and was the only backup quarterback to play in the Super Bowl for the last 20 years. Tavares Jackson was tragically killed in a car crash in Alabama. Adam, it's only 36 years old, and he seems to me, I mean, the absolute outpouring from absolutely anyone who had anyone to any communication or any time spent with him, obviously not just in Seattle but in Minnesota as well, where he kind of was the guy behind Brett Favre. It says a lot about how quickly and how universal the warmth towards him and the sadness at his loss, at passing, was, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, listen to a bit of Seattle sports radio this week. I mean, as you say, no one had even a mixed word to say about the guy. He just came across as an absolute gem of a bloke. And he's one of those people that's became like a bit of a family cult hero, because I'm not sure if you remember, but after the championship game in 2014, when Russell Wilson was in floods of tears after beating Green Bay eventually, sorry, 2015 it would have been, 2014 season, he said, you know, T-Jack did a great job winning the coin toss, and actually he had nothing to do with it. He just walked into the middle, stood there, whilst the Packers captain got the toss wrong. So T-Jack has always been known as the great coin tosser in like our family talk when we talk about the Seahawks. So he's always like really resonated, and it's one of those things that when you have someone like that, and I'm sure we all have that with various sports, you know, there's a guy that's a cult hero from your football team or your cricket team or whatever, that it just kind of doubly resonates, and it was just really shocking to see it.
Duncan?
Yeah, just to echo what you said, I mean, just how everyone has been so affected by it. You see it absolutely everywhere, you know, from Walter Jones to the, you know, the teams he was coaching with in college, and everywhere has been really so affected by him. And for a backup quarterback, I thought that was, you know, just so heartwarming, really. And sorry, go on.
Yeah, no, but he's a Seahawks starting quarterback. They haven't had many over the years, but also he started half the season with one of his pecs torn off the bone kind of thing. He showed that kind of toughness kind of is shone through, and it was consistent in all the messages. I mean, there's two pictures I kind of, I think I, I've sent one to you, Adam, is the picture that Russell Wilson tweeted of him, BJ Daniels, and the quarterback coach, Carl Smith. Is that the quarterback coach? With all their Super Bowl rings, which is just, I think I tweeted when he, it's just, that's absolutely perfect. I mean, like, that is kind of, like I said, it's, to watch that, he played meet, well, he played snaps in the Super Bowl. Not many backup quarterbacks can say that over the last, well, no backup quarterbacks last 20 years can say that bar him. But he kind of, that kind of image. And then the one I think I did send to you was the, of him walking out all by his lonesome on that coin toss you talked about. It's like a weirdly iconic Seattle picture. It's like the swagger of that team is kind of in that one picture of a quarterback with his hands, in his hand warmers walking out to, we'll just walk out 40 yards and walk back 40 yards. It's a weirdly iconic picture.
And if I'm not mistaken, there's another picture of him from the Super Bowl night when, are there not a few players that use him as like a human cigarette or something?
I can't remember. I don't know that one.
I'm sure there's a picture of four players like lifting him up and holding him sideways. And he's got a white hat on and they use him as like a human cigar. I'm going to try and find this now. I'm sure about this.
But, like, I mean, everything. I mean, BJ Daniels said that when him and Russ went into that building, that Tavares Jackson shone the way. Everything you see, that how BJ Daniels was conducting himself in all these few NFL stops, obviously, in XFL a few months ago as well. Like, everything he's done, everything, how he's conducting himself, is all because he watched and was shown how to do that position at that level by T-Jack Duncan.
I mean, I've only got positive memories of him from, you know, the smiling on the sideline to the coin tosses, to just been, you know, like you say, so spent so long in the league, and, you know, still been so positive and a positive effect on everyone else around him. So
yeah, so me, in his NFL career, he started for two teams and backed up Russell Wilson, Brett Favre. It's not a bad CV to for your family to hold that their T-Jack, that Tavares did with his NFL career. Because, as I said, he got opportunities that not many quarterbacks do, and he made the most of them. And as was shown, he left a pretty hefty mark on those who come into contact with him, didn't he, Adam?
Yeah, 100%. That's very, very well put.
Yeah. Anything else in the NFL Seahawks world? I mean, Clowney has dictated most of it. It just seems that everything draft is going to be slightly different, as we talked about earlier. So we should have a quick dive in the bin. But Adam, you entered the call saying you had plenty of options, so I'll allow you to begin.
I've got one that has been driving me mad, and it's come around basically from a lot of people talking about Isaiah Simmons and how he's being written off in some part because he's not an obvious fit for a defense. And I'm going to extrapolate it and say that it's a bin for anyone that like cannot possibly evaluate a player unless they can find a comparison that fits for them. Like, you know, this receiver is good because he reminds me of this receiver, even though that receiver might be worse than someone who is clearly better, but they can't find a player comp for him. It's like these people exist in such a bubble where they need, if they haven't got a comp, they're not comfortable with them. You could probably play Isaiah Simmons in 7 or 9 of the starting defensive positions in a 4-3 defense, and he'd probably do a really good job. Like, and look at someone like Derwin James, who's come out and been an absolute monster. And it's just, I don't know, it's just pissed me off. And they've got to fill so much time that it's like they're denigrating a guy because he's too much, he's much better than the kind of thing that we've seen before. Like, I don't watch an awful lot of college football, but when you do watch Clemson games, he just jumps off the page as someone that's just ridiculously good.
Yeah, I mean, I might have even said to you, Duncan, I think the thing with Simmons is with the, as you said, the impact he had on that Clemson defense. Name another Clemson front seven player who's going to get drafted anywhere close to as high as Simmons is. That kind of just shows the impact he had on Simmons and lack of position, Duncan.
Yeah,
need for a comp.
I absolutely 100% buy into the need for comparison to someone else and why that would be absolutely so frustrating. And on Isaiah Simmons, I must admit to being someone who wouldn't fancy him as high as 4 or 5, you know, in the single digits in the draft, because he is positionless. And I'm not sure if NFL defenses are ready for that. But then, you know, with the offenses getting more collegiate and you know, these hybrid players, you know, maybe that is what the defense is crying out for. But just for me, it just doesn't quite feel quite right for an NFL defense just to have someone who, you know, is he a linebacker? Is he a safety? You know, is the defense ready for someone like that, that high in the draft? I'm not sure.
That kind of sentence, Adam, is why I messaged you the other day saying I think he's going to be a 49er come Friday morning.
What, you reckon he'll just fall that far?
I think he'll go to about 11 and I'll jump up and take him and just give him to Robert Saleh, make him even more of a commodity to have in the head coach ranks. Because if you add him to that defense with, even though they've lost Buckner, is that the D-lineman they lost?
Even though
they lost him, they've still got Bosa, they've still got Armstead, they've got, obviously they've got Sherman, they're probably going to go into the cornerback class as well. But if you add him to that defense alongside Warner and Quan Alexander, it's just, I mean, I would happily petition for the Seahawks to move the hell out of the NFC West for the next 5-6 years if that happens. But yeah, no, I think Simmons is, I think Simmons might be a better defensive player in the draft than Chase Young, but I think there is kind of that thing where the NFL, I mean, me and Duncan talked about Jacob Eason being the prototypical quarterback, but he might not be very good in that prototype kind of thing. He's Joe Burrow, Tua, Herbert, Jordan Love are probably better than Eason. But because he's that prototypical guy and he's that safe 6'4", can fling it a mile kind of prospect, he's going to go higher than he probably should. And I think it's going to be the opposite for that.
I reckon Eason might struggle for the lack of a pro day where someone can't just stand next to him and say, wow, this guy's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the combine did a lot for him. I mean, I think Daniel Jeremiah and all that spent a good while talking about just how his arm sounds kind of thing. I think what Duncan said earlier about him being a quarterback, a team could fly up to 27, come and get kind of thing, kind of fits. But on the other side of that, I think Simmons is the opposite. That I think Duncan has a point where NFL teams aren't quite ready to throw off their old school prototypes. And yeah, I kind of agree with me. I think Simmons is worth a top 5 pick, but I think the NFL's stodgy ways will see him not be a top 5 pick, if that makes sense. Duncan, anyone for the bin for you?
Yeah, I'm going to throw something in, and that's pick tipping. I really want to go on Twitter during the draft. I really want to go on there. I want to have some banter with the people and slag off everyone's picks or say, man, that's a great pick. But I don't want to see the next pick before it's announced. I want to enjoy it on the telly. Just stop it. You know, stop telling me on Twitter before it's announced officially. You know, just let me enjoy my Twitter.
Yeah, because basically the draft is going to start at Detroit on Thursday, and it's still going to take 40 minutes to get there, which kind of leads into my kind of thing. Adam, on pick tipping.
I'm just thinking, presumably, that's not going to be possible this time because it's all going to be coming. Like, does the pick tipping not happen because it's, you know, it's slightly filmed in advance and all the journalists are there talking to each other?
They're on the war room, yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't know, but I'm guessing that, like, Eisen and that kind of get, because they have to prep graphics, don't they? Because obviously when the picks announced, they show a graphic and highlights and stuff. They have to prep that, so they're clearly told.
True.
20 seconds, but I guess, yeah, I mean, I guess it still would exist, but everything's going to be on a delay, isn't it, I guess? But, yeah.
Yeah, it is a truly awful thing, and it's fucking annoying.
It's so annoying. I mean, like we can probably guess who it's going to be, but there is pick-tipping when you're not trying to pick-tip, because the amount of times Mayock and Jeremiah kind of go, look out for X, or look out for X position when no one's really said anything about position. And then it's just linebacker from some D3 school kind of thing. It's kind of, oh, come on. It's like you make it TV worthy, kind of allow it to be TV worthy. Like, people are going to react to it no matter what, no matter if you tip it or not. So yeah, it is uber annoying. And I've just completely forgot what my pick was going to be. Yeah, I can't remember. Oh, well, never mind. Any other nominations while I try and remember, Adam?
Any other nominations? I do find the whole like NFL Network still kind of going with like Siciliano just sat in the studio by himself, and then everyone kind of like the Michael Silvers and the Rappaports and the Steve Weiss is just kind of phoning in from home on Zoom, which is presumably how they're doing things. Like, it is amazing to me that, that's like still going on. Like, the NFL is all, you could almost be forgiven that if you just followed the NFL and nothing else, like, you might not even realize there was a global pandemic because they're just like just trotting on and just cracking on with what's going, you know, their normal, the way in which they normally act. So that is a bit bizarre to me. But I don't think anything else massively been worthy. I mean, obviously Dak Prescott is an idiot. but we probably knew that already. So no, I don't think there's anything massive.
No,
I'm trying to stall really... so you can,
it's completely gone. I even answered Duncan's one, goes, oh, that's going to lead into mine, and I've completely forgot what mine was. Any other points of contention in the NFL world, which is, I mean, I said to Duncan at the start of the podcast, it's weird how the NFL is continuing and how this draft weekend is going to be next week, but at the same time, those conversations we're going to have on Friday morning, Saturday morning, Sunday morning, Monday morning is kind of a nice distraction from everything else that's going on and the constant, just, I don't know, it's kind of near an apocalyptic news coverage, isn't it? It's not 100% positive that the league is continuing regardless at this stage, but at the same time, talking about it is kind of a positive, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the NFL have handled it in a fairly good way in the sense that they're acting as if it's going to go on and they'll react if necessary. I don't think people that jump on and start grandstanding about there's no chance of football in September onwards are doing anyone any favours, really, especially from a mental health standpoint. I think that's unnecessary, but people obviously love to do that. But I don't want to watch sport behind closed doors at all. It's just a personal opinion. I think you lose the whole essence of why we watch it. But, you know, I guess that's realistically what's going to happen. But in a way, the NFL just kind of cracking on as if nothing's going on is almost a good thing because there's no need to be pessimistic at this stage on top of the pessimism that we've already got in the world anyway.
Duncan, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, just on the closed doors thing, I think we got a preview of that, you know, how much that affects it at WrestleMania, didn't we?
The biggest example of why no fans doesn't work is that the most two memorable things from that were pre-produced outside of a wrestling thing matches in quotation marks. They were films in the middle of WrestleMania. They weren't wrestling matches, and they were the two best things about it, which kind of sums up your point, Duncan.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they could have done with calling the Atlanta Falcons for some crowd noise, couldn't they? I mean, pump some in.
Yeah,
but we also had Champions League games behind closed doors, and they were garbage.
Yeah, but well, most Champions League games aren't great, Adam. I mean, I know you enjoyed Amsterdam and everything, but like, come on, like when you're playing Belarus fourth team, it's kind of, yeah, I'm fine. But also, there was talk earlier on one of the, I think Sky Sports News, which is another channel, why is that still on? There's nothing happening. But they were talking about it's going to be weird if they play behind closed doors and the ball's booted into the stands and it takes 45 minutes to get the ball back. That's what being a Cov fan's been like for the last 6 months at St. Andrews. So welcome to my world. It's not much fun, but it's quite funny watching ball boys look for footballs under seats 17 rows back. So that could be, maybe they'll put a ball boy cam on, maybe on Sky Digital with something if that happens. But yeah, the Seahawks enter the draft week. I think that is about everything, isn't it, Adam?
I think we've done very well.
Yeah, so we'll try and maybe do a podcast post and maybe get one of our stable of guests. Duncan, you are now
friend of the show category,
yeah.
I think
the two appearance category, I think, not sure who else is in that. Is Jessamine's in that, isn't she?
Yeah, I think she is. Fine company, yeah, to so, keep.
Absolutely. We'll try to get one of our stable of companions on. Apparently I may be appearing on the Seahawks pod over on Field Goals on Friday morning, Thursday night, Friday morning, or maybe a bit later if the Seahawks do as we feel they're going to do and trade out of Thursday altogether. Thanks to everyone who did the Zoom quiz last night. We raised a bit of money for a kids hospice up in Bolton, which was a choice of Tom who won the quiz. And he's a listener of the podcast, Adam, and says he enjoys listening very much. And we teach him more than anything else he consumes regards NFL and Seahawks, Adam.
Blimey, he must have incredibly low standards.
That's kind of what I said. Hey, but if you want to get involved with the podcast, all usual means and message you can. If you want to go back and listen before the draft, or maybe after they select him in the fifth round, go back and dig into my chat last week with Madre Harper from Southern Illinois, who's a proper, proper impressive kid or dude, bloke, person to talk to and talk to about his whole approach. You weren't here for the chat, Adam, but you listened to it. He is quite an impressive Seahawky type dude, isn't he?
He was brilliant. It was a great half an hour. And the show before that, we had Mina Bloody Kimes on. So we've gone Kimes, Harper and Terry. I mean, if that's not a great accountancy firm or three great guests in a row, I don't know what else to say, to be honest.
That should be one of those like band t-shirts where just got the surnames of all the band members on, like Pearl Jam.
Sensational.
The Beatles. Yeah, until next, all the usual means and methods, possession podcast on Podbean, on Spotify, UK Seattle Seahawks fans on Facebook. Where can people catch you and your writings and other podcast audio formats, Duncan?
Yeah, well, I am on at 99 Yards. We've got some good things coming up. We've got some good things from the last couple of weeks. We've just announced our top 50 players of the 21st century, which is voted on by readers and pundits from the UK. Top 10 is being announced this week, so that's quite good. And we've had some guys on the conference calls, the draft conference calls with Mel Kiper and Daniel Jeremiah. So that is due to come out as well, so it should be good.
Any cool space for Kevin Norwood in the top 50?
Oh, absolutely. Mainstay. All 50 spots.
So yeah, Duncan, like, you know, like Courtland Sutton's my guy, Kevin Norwood is Adam's guy, so...
Okay. He was underused.
Yeah, until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks. The beard is magnificent, Stu.
Well,
I mean, I was quite pissed last night anyway, but I lost my head.